The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And we're early today. We are. It's a Friday. Welcome to it. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com on the Progressive Voices Network. We're not on Progressive Voices yet, not for another hour. But we are on YouTube, although people don't know we're here yet. And the reason I'm coming to you early is because of what's going on in the world. And normally I would preempt the show that I had planned. But the show I had planned is Steve Van Zandt and an interview that we recorded on Wednesday that I really want to share with you today because it's Friday. The weekend is just about here. And I think it's a great segue into the weekend, especially when so many of us are hurting because of what's going on in the world right now. So last night, you know, I'm in the shower after dinner, pre-painting time, and David walks in. And he said, well, Vladimir Putin just bombed the biggest nuclear power plant in Europe. Like, what? Yeah. And sure enough, I get out of the shower. I come outside to the living room. I turn on the TV, and I just cannot believe what I'm seeing. I'm not going to even try to pronounce the name of this power plant, the town that it's in. It starts with a Z. It's hard. But there it is. It's on fire. And all I can think is, holy shit, this is going to be Chernobyl on steroids. Then there were the reports that the firefighters who went to try to put out the fire were being shot at by the Russian soldiers. Well, the good news is they were able to put out the fire before it hit any of the sensitive areas of this power plant. And the IAEA says there's no increase in radiation in the area. So the reactor survived. But I got to wonder, you know, was that just dumb luck? I mean, is the planet going to survive, at least, you know, for now, because Putin's military is bad at their jobs? I mean, the whole thing is inconceivable. So I had been planning next week to have Harvey Wasserman on the show. And if you're going, okay, the name sounds familiar. Who's Harvey Wasserman? Harvey Wasserman is one of the OG anti-nuclear activists, right? He was one of the people responsible for organizing Musicians United Against Safe Energy, Muse. They're the ones who put on the No Nukes concerts back in New York in 1979. You know, became the No Nukes movie, the No Nukes album. We had John Hall on the program a month or so ago, whose song Power I played. Didn't get copyright violated for, thank you very much. You know, they've been fighting the fight against nuclear anything for decades. So I saw an article written by Harvey Wasserman and about the, what he said was, and of course I closed the window. I hate when I do this. I close out a window of notes that I know I want to read from. But let's see, maybe I have it. I have it here. You know, he's been saying that Ukraine is loaded with nuclear power plants. I believe there are 15 throughout the state. And what he's been warning about is the fact that, well, you know, traditional, and I can't believe I'm even saying this, traditional bombs can turn the country of Ukraine into a nuclear hotspot. And we came this close last night. Now, I breathed a huge sigh of relief when I heard the news that they put the fire out, that there was no rise in radiation levels around the plant. But it's terrifying. And I can't help but think of all the people over there and this madman taking over. And now, so the Russians have control of that nuclear power plant. The workers are still keeping it operational at gunpoint. It's just horrible. It's just horrible. All right. So anyway. Oh, okay. Okay. So I'll tell you what. So I called, I emailed Harvey last night and I said, I know you're supposed to come on Wednesday, but I'm sitting here freaking out and I'm thinking that maybe, can we talk tomorrow instead? And, sure enough, he made it happen. So, let me share with you that interview. Harvey Wasserman, who was one of the founders of MUSE, Musicians United for Safe Energy, one of the organizers of the No Nukes concerts. I first met him back in 2007 when he wrote the book Solartopia, and he's never looked back. And so let me share some of that conversation with you. Harvey Wasserman, my guest on the Nicole Sandler Show. It's coming. All right. Well, joining us on the phone is some on the line on video is somebody I haven't spoken to in a long time, although we did talk quite a bit. God, 10, 15 years ago. Harvey Wasserman.
We'll have to resume our co-conspiracy here because there is a ton going on.
Oh my God, so much. But the reason we're talking today, and actually we were going to talk next week, because Harvey Wasserman is I know you as a no nuke advocate. In fact, you're the guy who came up with the term no nukes for when
it started. Hippie farm, we kind of all did it together, okay. But it seemed pretty obvious at the time. Let's put it that way. And we defeated the nukes that they tried to build near our house. So there you go.
There you go. Well, you were involved in the No Nukes concerts for MUSE with, Jackson Brown, James Taylor, Bruce Springsteen. And how cool is it that Bruce just released his entire set from the No Nukes Madison Square Garden concerts? We had only seen, two or three songs that were in the movie. And now he released the whole thing. How many years later is it?
Yeah, it's it was 79, wow. So it's 43 years. But I have to tell you, I'm sorry to sound like such a whatever, but I was 50 feet stage right both nights.
Oh, my God.
So it didn't get any better than that. And I vowed after that I would never go to another Bruce Springsteen concert because what could match that?
Right.
It was his 30th birthday, by the way.
Oh, my God.
And but then he played at Ohio State for Obama. And I took my kids because I wanted to make sure that they saw Bruce Springsteen.
So. Oh, very cool. Well, it's prophetic. It's not prophetic. There's something that is just right that we're talking today because after we finish, I have an interview with Steve Van Zandt that I just recorded 2 days ago that is going to run. So it all comes together, doesn't it?
We hope.
we hope. And the reason we're talking is, again, I had you scheduled to come on next week because you're sounding the alarm, as are we all, about Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which is just horrific. And it's killing me. And I know people around the world. Let me tell you a brief story. I like to reach out to people in other parts of the world. And so when the war was being, we saw that Putin was amassing all these troops around the border. I started calling Kyiv, Ukraine, to try to talk to somebody who speaks English because I like to connect with people on a human level. Well, long story short, I met this woman, Tatiana, who she and her husband own a hostel in the middle of Kyiv called Friends Forever. And I saw the name of it. It's in English. I thought, okay, this has to be the one. And I called and she answered. And we spoke very briefly because it was the day after he invaded. And we are now communicating using the Telegram app. And yesterday, I hadn't heard from her all day. And we exchanged messages. I mean, they're hiding in the basement. I mean, it just, it's tearing my heart out. So yesterday afternoon, I get, it was actually last night at 8:45 p.m., I get a message from her, and it says, shot atomic electro station of the city of, how do you say the name of the city where this nuclear plant? Zaporizhia. She said, shot atomic electro station in the city of Zaporizhia, and then followed by a bunch of crying emojis. And then I said, I saw that. I'm in shock. How are you doing? And she said, in the morning when the curfew ends, we want to run to Western Ukraine. My husband will not be released abroad. So she won't leave her husband because any men between the ages of 18 and 60 are not allowed to leave because they want them to fight. She said the news says Kadyrov's people want to seize the power unit in order to blackmail Europe. We will go to the village. Big cities are suffering. And then she said the president has just spoken and said that they want to mine nuclear reactors. There are 6 power units in Zaporizhia, 15 in all of Ukraine. Only one exploded in Chernobyl. And actually, she's paraphrasing what President Zelensky said in an address to the people last night. This, you've been warning about this, that tell us, I mean, the dangers of, forget just war, but war in a place like Ukraine and invasion into Ukraine, where they have so many nuclear power plants, is particularly dangerous. And you've been sounding the alarm. That's why I was going to talk to you next week.
Nicole, I don't want to sound hyperbolic here, but this is the most dangerous moment in human history since the Cuban Missile Crisis. Mm-hmm. And it's on a par with it. You have 15 atomic reactors in Ukraine at 4 different spots. The 12 of them were built by the Soviets and opened before the fall of the Soviet Union, which means they're all more than 30 years old.
Right.
They accumulated at these reactors way more radiation than was at Chernobyl, because they've been operating for 30 years. Chernobyl was relatively new. They're bigger than Chernobyl. And it will take virtually nothing to blow any of them up and to send radioactive material to carpeting Ukraine, Belarus, and all of Western Europe. That and then the radiation will come here. In 1986, radiation was raised. Radiation levels were measured in New England, across to California. And in fact, there was a bird refuge north of San Francisco, mm-hmm. where the rain came down about 10 days after the explosion, and bird births in that sanctuary dropped 60%. So, you know, we're looking here. And then in 2007, there was published in Russian, it was published in the U.S. in 2009, a study done by 3 Russian scientists who basically collated 5,000 different studies that were done. And, you know, a lot of scientists in the wake of Chernobyl said, whoop-de-doo, and they went and did all these experiments because of the radiation. And these 3 scientists came to the conclusion that Chernobyl by 2007 had resulted in 985,000 deaths. Wow. So what we're looking at here, you multiply that times 15, you multiply it again by, say, 100 or 2 based on the realities, and You have the end of the world as we know it. That this is what we're looking at here. This is why people are saying, don't build nuclear plants, right, for God's sake.
Well,
so there are 93 similar reactors. Well, they're slightly better, but there are 93 reactors that old in the United States. There are 400 worldwide. Some of those are newer, but nonetheless, this is a global catastrophe. All Vladimir Putin has to do, he now controls the one with the 6.
Yes, and the workers there are still working, but with guns pointed at them, because it's under Russian control now.
Right. And they're exhausted, and they're old. The nuclear workforce is pretty old.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of them have been retiring. And they could go in any minute. And the Ukraine is dependent on nuclear for 50% of its electricity. So it's not a simple matter to shut them down. But they need to be shut down as soon as possible.
Right.
But Putin can just say to the world, hey, listen, you know, do what I say or I'm going to blow up these reactors and you're all going to die.
Right. Well, and that, I mean, that's the fear. And so last night, they, you know, they're firebombing the whole area and they drop bombs either on directly on this nuclear power plant or right next to it. I want to show you a quick video. It runs about 2 minutes, but it's from the Ukraine English news channel that is on YouTube. It's UATV.
Європа зараз повинна прокинутись. Горить найбільша атомна станція Європи прямо зараз.
Europe must wake up now. Europe's largest nuclear power plant is on fire. Right now, Russian tanks are firing upon nuclear units. These are tanks equipped with thermal imagers. That is, they know where they are shooting. They have been preparing for this. I appeal to all Ukrainians, to all Europeans, to all people who know the world Chernobyl. Who knows how many grief and casualties the explosion at the nuclear power plant caused. It was a global catastrophe. Hundreds of thousands of people struggled with its consequences. Tens of thousands of people were evacuated. Russia wants to do it again and already repeats, but six times more. Europeans, wake up, please. Speak to your politicians. Russian troops are firing upon the nuclear power plant in Ukraine. Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, the city of Energodar. There are six power units. Six. One power unit exploded in Chernobyl. We contacted the leaders, our partners. I talked to Charles Michel, to Scholz. I talked to Duda. I talked to President Biden. We contacted International Atomic Energy Agency Director General Grossi and Prime Minister Johnson. We warn everyone. No state except Russia has ever fired upon nuclear power units. For the first time in our history, in the history of mankind, the terrorist state has resorted to nuclear terror. Russian propagandists threatened everyone. We remember to cover the world with nuclear ashes. Now it's not a threat. Now it's a reality. We do not know how the fire at the station will end. When there will or won't be an explosion, no one can predict this for sure. But our men have always kept the nuclear power plant safe so that there are no provocations, so that no one can capture the station, mine it, and then blackmail the whole world with a nuclear catastrophe. The Russian military must be stopped immediately. Shout to your politicians. Ukraine has 15 nuclear units. If there is an explosion, it is end of everything. The end of Europe. This is the evacuation of Europe. Only immediate European action can stop Russian troops. Do not allow the death of Europe from the catastrophe at the nuclear power plant.
Загибелі Європи від катастрофи на атомній станції.
Nuclear blackmail is what Russia does right now. The invaders captured Energodar with the biggest nuclear power plant in Europe with six power units. The Chernobyl catastrophe was caused by the explosion on one unit. Right now, the Russian terrorists have already occupied the Energodar city. In other cities, they surround that and start bombing civilians, destroying houses and infrastructure. Right after, they block the humanitarian corridors, demanding people to leave for the enemy's territory. These and other brutal non-human terrorist methods may be stopped if the Western countries create no-fly zone over Ukraine. On the land, the numerical superiority can be easily confronted. The Ukrainian army is fighting fiercely, and one more fighter jet is down near Volnovakha. More military vehicles are captured by Ukrainian soldiers and territorial defense. Ignorance and lack of mental activity bring Russian invaders to stupid situations. After surrendering Kherson, the terrorists brought to the city so-called humanitarian convoy, accompanied by shouts about Russian warship and Ukrainian flags around the convoy left. Now people are waiting for the new provocation. Another convoy brought to the city many paid Russians who are going to pretend that Kherson is willing to join Russia, the same they did on Donbas and Crimea. Chernihiv, 47 people died there after terrible bombing of their residential district. The evidences of this war crime were verified by the New York Times.
There's more.
Meanwhile, in Russia, people continue to live in parallel reality, just starting to understand that something went wrong. On this video, they're trying to make last shopping in IKEA until it works. Supporting Putin became dangerous for the reputation, and even the Hungarian Prime Minister Orban stopped blocking anti-war coalition's decisions. But the main decision during this war is to be voted on in the U.S. Congress tomorrow, whether or not to close the sky over Ukraine and prevent killing civilians.
This is just heartbreaking. Actually, I thought that was a little more. I did see a speech from President Zelensky talking about the attack that hit this nuclear power plant yesterday. And he's talking about the entirety of Europe basically at risk. And we got lucky last night. So there was the fire. They put it out, and apparently it didn't hit any parts of the main part of the reactor. There's no elevated levels of radiation. We dodged a huge bullet last night because when this happened, I thought, that's it. This is another Chernobyl. And forget, you know, the individuals being killed by bombs in Ukraine. Masses of people are going to die. And it, you know, still could happen. This is what you've been warning about.
Yep. And, you know, there's nothing at this point to do. We don't know anything about Putin's mindset. I mean, he could just say, hey, you know, I don't care, blow him up.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are people who would follow his orders. All the nuclear plants on Earth need to shut. I mean, this is just, we warned about this 50 years ago. This is not like, you know, hindsight here. I can show you articles that were written in the early 1970s warning against just this. And here we have 400 reactors worldwide and 93 in the United States. They're all, and every one of them in the United States is 30 years old.
Yeah.
Or more.
Right.
You know, and they you got two in Georgia that they're trying to build, that have been building for years. They're way over schedule, way over budget, $30 billion. In South Carolina, they spent $10 billion building two nuclear plants, and they had to throw in the towel. They're never going to open. They're not going to finish them. And the guy, one of the chief executives who built them, is in prison. So, you know, but this is Apocalypse Now. I have an article coming out called Apocalypse Now. And if anybody wants to really get a grip on what we're talking about here, HBO did a 5-part series on Chernobyl.
It's brilliant. It's terrifying, but it's brilliant, and everyone should watch it.
Right. And the way to watch it is get up in the morning around 10 or 11 at night, 10 or 11 in the morning, and watch it a full day.
Yeah.
I watched it over a 3-day period. It was a big mistake. I didn't sleep for 3 nights.
Yeah.
So, you know, get it and see it.
Do the binge thing. Right. And do it. And
it's very accurate, by the way. That series is extremely accurate. So, Nicole, what we have to do now, there are only two good things that have come out of this. The first is that Finland was in contract with the Russians to build another reactor. And when they invaded, Finland canceled the reactor.
Uh-huh.
That's good. And then worldwide, people are getting the message, and the stocks in renewable energy have been soaring. And, you know, this, we do have the answer.
Mm-hmm.
First started fighting nukes. People say, well, what are you going to do for the power? And we had no idea, but we said, well, wind and solar. And it turned out the wind and solar, the technological progress and the economic progress of wind and solar have been virtually miraculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just been spectacular, and they are extremely cheap. And they, you know, there's challenges. There's lithium for solar panels and bird kills for windmills, but it can be dealt with. It's not plutonium, and
right.
It's not Vladimir Putin threatening the world. But at this point in time, there's no answer. He can do whatever he wants. He has the world by the throat. And all he has to do is say, I'm going to blow up Zaporozhye.
Yep.
And everybody says, you know, how high do you want us to jump? Because he doesn't care.
Right. And that's what's happening now. He's basically holding the entire world hostage. And NATO and the U.S. are hesitant to step in to militarily to help Ukraine because that would trigger World War III. And Putin has warned, I don't know how many times now, that it will be a nuclear World War III if it comes to that. So,
right.
Yeah.
And he have to launch a nuclear weapon. That's the point.
He can just drop it.
The radiation coming. Let's put it this way. In Fukushima, Fukushima has already emitted 100 times more radioactive cesium than was released at Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Wow.
So there.
Yeah.
And that the numbers at the 15 Ukrainian nukes is off the charts. Not even calculable.
It's insane, you know, and we talked however many years ago when you released the book Solartopia, in 2007, that's when we first spoke. So we're going back quite a few years. And, you know, back then we were talking about these plants that were in operation here in the U.S. that need to be decommissioned. I'm in Florida. We have Turkey Point that they keep wanting to renew. And, you know, it's at the coast. A hurricane could come through and obliterate everything. And each year during hurricane season, we collectively hold our breaths. Well, we shouldn't have to do that.
No, well, Andrew in 91 passed directly over in Turkey Point.
Yep.
And you've got St. Lucie also up the coast.
Right.
So, you know, we did stop the one in near Tampa. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, this is the end of the world as we know it. I mean, the entire Earth now is dependent. The entire human race is dependent on the whims of this, what Donald Trump called savvy genius. This guy can do whatever he wants because he has the world by the nuclear throat.
Exactly.
And we've been telling you for 50 years, do not build these nuclear plants. And there's 493 in the U.S., 15 in Ukraine. You know, and it's you're looking here at the suicide of a species based on one person.
Right. Now, I'm looking at today as if, holy shit, we were hit with the ultimate second chance. When I emailed you last night and said, instead of Wednesday, can we do something tomorrow? Because I'm in shock. I mean, I at the time didn't know that they were going to be able to put out the fire before it hit the reactor. I thought this is it. This is the beginning of the end. So now,
especially since they were shooting at the fire.
Yes, they were shooting at the firefighters who were trying to put out the fire to save the planet that they were going to destroy. So we kind of have a second chance now. What did you think last night when you're watching this? I can only imagine.
Well, I did do what I always do. I wrote a piece called Apocalypse Now.
Okay.
And my next one is going to be called The End of the World as We Know It.
Mm-hmm.
People got to understand this is it. And we're pretty much helpless. I mean, the U.S. can do sanctions and do all this stuff, but the nuclear plants are there, and we not clear on what we can do about it. It's just not clear. Ukraine, we can tell them to shut all the reactors. They lose half their electric power, and that alone is not going to do it. I mean, Putin could just drop a bomb, a small bomb, into the pit at Chernobyl, where it's still radioactive and still hot, and create an apocalypse there.
Right, and he's a madman. Look, I hold him in the same regard that I hold the former guy. Donald Trump scared the shit out of me. The fact that he had access to nuclear weapons frightened me every day he was occupying the Oval Office. And Putin is, they're two of a kind. And the fact is, Biden's not my favorite president ever, but if Trump were still in there, he'd be fighting alongside of Putin. He'd be supporting Putin. So world has gone mad.
Donald Trump is a creature of organized crime. And he grew up in organized crime. And in the 80s, when he had all his daddy's real estate, where the mob poured all the concrete, And he kept going bankrupt. That's when the Soviet Union fell and the Russian mob took over and they started laundering their money through Trump. And when Putin took over the Soviet Union, Russia in 1999, mm-hmm. He inherited Trump. Trump is an asset, a wholly owned asset of the Russian mob and run by Putin. And that's why Trump grovels at Putin's feet. It's not some pee tape. It's the fact that Trump is owned outright.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have no doubt.
Putin. And so there you go. So listen, let's talk again, hopefully next week.
Okay.
Send me the link. I'll send it around. And I do have my History US coming out. So
right. So let's talk about that, too. So we'll set aside a full segment to talk. But I wanted to get you on today, especially after what happened last night. This is a warning. This should be a wake up call to every person on the planet that this shit has got to stop. They need to stop Putin and we need to decommission these plants. So
I mean, they all got a shot, and it's more than it's only a warning.
Yeah.
If you've gotten through it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a situation right now. I wish it was just a warning, but you know, it's a situation that is a long way from over.
No.
So, and Nicole, thank you. It's great to see you. And, let's talk again soon. I'll send you the PDF of my history book and hopefully we'll have the luxury of talking about US history at the other end of this.
That would be great. Harvey Wasserman, thank you so much. Take care. Thank you. Thanks for your work.
I love the painting of your cat.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Harvey Wasserman. Again, you can find him. His website is solartopia.org. Solartopia.org. And Solartopia is also his handle on Twitter. So I've known Harvey, not well, but we've been acquaintances since the book came out in 2007. And he's always been my, the nuclear guy I go to. And sure enough, he's written a couple of articles recently. I'll try to remember to post them on the blog along with today's show at NicoleSandler.com/3-4-22, because that's the date. So you can read them. And as he said, he's got another one coming out anytime now. I see that's what he does to cope. He writes. What I do is I reach out to people. And so, there's a woman that I met that is... owns this hostel, a hotel, a low-cost hotel in the middle of Kyiv. And in my calling around to try to make a human contact, I met her. I think it was the day after Putin invaded, the day after the war actually started. And we only spoke for a couple of minutes because she said, they had to get downstairs because they were worried about bombs falling. Well, we have been in communication using the Telegram app and texting. I know so many of you are curious, and she might be listening. Tatiana, if you are listening, you have a lot of people here worried about you. So anyway, as you heard what I told Harvey, is last night, 8:45 p.m., I get a message from her basically saying that they just bombed the nuclear power plant. And I said, I saw that. I'm in shock. How are you doing? And she said, in the morning when the curfew ends, we want to run to Western Ukraine. The husband will not be released abroad. Well, we've talked about this before. They are not letting any men leave the country between the ages of 18 and 60. Because they need them to fight to protect the country. So basically what you're seeing, the refugees pouring into Poland and Hungary are mostly women and children. She sent me some messages last night and, I asked her, I said, well, is there any way you can get to Poland or Hungary? She said, I can do it without problem, but I will never leave my husband. And I said, obviously, I understand. And then she talked about President Zelensky speaking. It was the clip I played of him during the interview with Harvey talking about the attack. And she echoed what he said. The president has just spoken and said that they want to mine nuclear reactors, that there are 6 power units at Zaporizhia, 15 in all of Ukraine. Only 1 exploded in Chernobyl. So all the damage done in Chernobyl was from 1 unit. There are 6 in that 1 power plant. So things are very different. I asked how far she is from the plant. She said 500 kilometers. And to me, that's still too close. Well, then I asked her, their logistics. I know she talked about they left the hostel and they were about 30 kilometers outside of Kyiv. And I asked her if you're still staying there. And this is when I kind of lost it last night. She wrote back, "We are in a small room, 2 meters by 3 meters. 4 people and 3 cats now live in it. This is the first floor of the House of Prayer." So obviously, they're taking refuge in a church, in a tiny room. There are 4 adults and 3 cats. I can't even imagine. And that's what I wrote to her. I can't even imagine. And then that was the extent of our communication last night. Then about an hour before I went on the air today, I had sent her a message. I said, "How are you today? Any change?" Thank God they put out the fire at the plant, but I'm so worried that they'll do it again. And sure enough, at about 3 o'clock, it's now 4:35, she wrote back and she said, "Good evening. We couldn't stand it psychologically. We decided to leave. We stood in line at the gas station for a very long time, for at least 2 hours. Then we drove towards Western Ukraine, 560 kilometers. We're already driving for 12 hours and we will go for another 5 hours. There are traffic jams everywhere, a lot of control and everywhere check documents, but it's not so scary," she writes. It's not so scary. I'd be petrified. And I wrote back. I said, "I'm glad you're getting away from Kyiv." And I said, "Are you headed towards Lviv?" And she said, "No, we're now going to the village to friends." So they're trying to get away from the big cities because the big cities are what's being hit mostly. She said, "In a week, we will decide what to do next. My husband wants to send me abroad. I'm against that." And she said, "We will be 200 kilometers from Lviv." And so I wrote back, I said, "I'm glad you're going to be staying with friends. That's important." And I said, "I'd imagine the isolation is difficult." Anyway, she writes back. She said, "Thank you very much. I don't know you very well, but I want to hug you." And I said, that's how I feel. You're my person over there. I feel really connected to you. And I plan to meet you in person when this is all over." And then I told her, "You have an open invitation to visit anytime." And her response, there might be a lag in when the messages get there because, we are going back and forth. And I don't know how instantly it shows up. But she said, "I don't really want to remember this week. A special shock is that there were no products in stores, no meat and bread at all, milk. Today I went to a small store in the village along the road and everything is there. I just stood there and I looked at the full shelves of products and cried." And then she said, "After this, I will definitely come to visit America. We began to look at life too differently." And so I told her, you have a place to come and stay in South Florida. I haven't told David yet, but yeah, I made the decision. I made the call. Then I asked her if she knows about the hostel that they left. I mean, is it still standing? What's happening over there? And she said, "Our hostel was not damaged. We have people living there now. Not many. 3 people for free. They came to say goodbye. They wanted to go home on their feet because the trains take away only women and children. And I offered to stay in the hotel and look after our kind home." So, I mean, so far, so good. Her home is safe and they've got some people staying there. So we chatted a bit more. I asked her if she knew who Bruce Springsteen was because I've got Steve Van Zandt coming up. And the first part of our conversation, as you'll hear, is about what's happening in Ukraine. Steve Van Zandt is on Twitter. He's at Stevie Van Zandt. and he's very opinionated. And he's, I don't want to speak for him, you'll hear it for yourself, but he is outraged. He's outraged that we are, it seemed to be standing back and letting these poor people fend for themselves. Obviously, there's a lot of behind the scenes talks and negotiations and sending of weapons and money and things like that that we don't know about. But if you read Stevie's Twitter feed, he's all over this. And again, when I taped it with him, we taped the interview Wednesday evening. So after this show ended, and Wednesday, I was talking to the Project Censored guy. We were in the, you know, this is the mindset I'm in. And I don't know about you, but I just can't turn on a dime. I'm still unwinding from what we talk about during the show when the show ends. So we segued into the conversation about Ukraine and what's happening in Russia and the madman that is Putin, who does need to be taken out. I never thought I'd agree with Lindsey Graham about anything, but I agree about that one. Anyway, back to my exchange with Tatiana. So they're on the road now. They're driving for another 5 hours. She said, you know, I did ask her if she would like to talk today because, you know, we've been talking about talking. We'll get to that. She said, she's telling me about what they're doing, what she's doing. She said, we help as much as we can. We have a shop with purified mineral water. We develop water for free for all these days. We organize the delivery of 1,000 liters of water to the Akhmadet Children's Hospital, where shells also hit. I want to be useful. Oh, my God. Then she sent me some videos. She said, we are now passing near the city and there is 4G and a good mobile connection. Then I'm not sure because we're moving closer to the mountains. And that's when I asked her, can I call you now? Then we can record it and play it back when I'm on the air. And then she said, I think I'm not ready. Let me come to myself in a couple of days. I even did not speak to my husband. And I told her, no pressure whatsoever. The last thing I want to do is put any pressure on her. I said, whenever you want to talk, I'm here. You know, we're chatting back and forth. Look, she's a comfort to me. I hope that I'm some kind of comfort to her, that she's got somebody in the outside world who cares. I'm tearing up thinking about this. So she sent me some video. And hold on, I'm going to bring it up so you guys can see it. If you're watching on one of the video streams, she sent, you know, she talked about the shelves being empty in the grocery store. All right, here is one of the first videos she sent. So it's like a deli counter, you know, the refrigerated deli counter where they put the cold cuts and the things. And there's a couple of items in there, but most of it is empty. Then the next two are just empty shelves in the grocery stores. Oh, these are videos too. Let me see if I can't play this and see. I don't know if there's any audio. There we go. There is audio. Oh. So she's showing, she's not speaking though, but the pretty much empty grocery store. All right, let me go to the next one. Here's another video. And again, just empty shelves. There's a few items on the shelves here, but for the most part, the shelves are bare. And then, so this is a, she wrote, that they're driving through Kiev. I think she said this is like 30 meters. Oh, she's speaking in Ukrainian, not English. But there's a building. You can see the side of a big, tall apartment building that had been bombed. There's like right in the middle of it. You know, it looks like an airplane crashed into the middle of this building. And what she said to me is, this is me today passing through Kyiv. This is 300 meters from my house. I'm just in shock. Then she sent this photograph, and it's a line of people outside a store, and I asked, is that a line to get cash? She said, this is a line of people for the grocery store. They brought sausage and meat. This is 3 kilometers from the center of Kyiv near my house. She said, with cash, the same story. But large supermarkets help people. You can buy something small, pay with a card, and they will give you change plus 500 UAH. Whatever UAH is, I'm not sure. Obviously, that's the Ukraine money. Hold on, I'm going to put my picture back up there again. This has been, look, is I'm so emotional just being on this end. And, you know, I'm happy in that I have contact with a person over there. So I can focus on one person. I want to know that Tatiana is okay. And if I can keep in contact with her, it somehow helps me. And I have to hope that having contact with me over here helps her too. And I hope that when this is all over, that, you know, we have a new friendship. And I told her, let me pull up again. What I said was, oh, now I can't find it. Well, I said, you know, when this is over, oh, we'll have plenty of time to talk when this is over, I hope. And then she responded with the praying hands emoji. This is a human tragedy, and it's all the doing of one man. You know, again, I said earlier, I didn't think I'd ever agree with Lindsey Graham on anything. Well, in a moment of honesty for him, and he apparently has them every once in a while, he came out and said is there a Brutus over there? I mean, he was basically saying someone needs to assassinate this fucker. And they do. You know, I know it's against the Geneva Conventions and everything else. We don't sanction extrajudicial killings. But in this case, it's warranted. It's warranted. So I'm going to take a very quick break here to play for you something that touched me again. So, you know, throughout the pandemic, I would find these parody songs online. And one of the people that I met who through these travels, somebody who we spoke to live on the air, whose songs I played, is a woman named Shirley Sherbon, who lives in New Zealand. Her day job is the principal of a elementary school or a grade school. But she discovered, I guess she always knew she has talent. She's a beautiful singer. But she developed this talent to make these parody videos. And her videos are usually quite funny. Well, today she decided to put one out that's not so funny, but does express her feelings about what's going on now, what's going on in Ukraine. And for the people of Ukraine, she put together this song, and you'll notice different lyrics, but it's her take on Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. It's Shirley Sherbon.
Now we dream of times we had before. We are all tired, we can't take more. And you don't care for hollow comfort, do you? We're sick of this pandemic, disastrous war, it's lunatic. Too crushed to feel the joy of hallelujah. It's brittle when you're facing hell, and I can't always be light-hearted for you. But know that I am at your side, more as a shoulder than a guide.
Name is Shirley Sherbon, and she's a school principal in New Zealand who, throughout the pandemic, started making parody videos. And she posted that one last night in honor of the people of Ukraine who are suffering right now. And, you know, one other thing about me forging this relationship with Tatiana is I want them to know that we care. That, you know, I mean, we're shedding tears as they are. You know, they may be having bombs falling on them, but we're hurting for them too. And my God, if there's anything we could do, we would do it. And that's Stephen Van Zandt's issue. Let me share with you a little bit from his Twitter stream, because he's gone full on. I'm just going to share, you know, a lot of people are pushing back on him. Someone said, are you just play acting an action movie script on here or what? And he said, yes, let's pretend we're the good guys and are tough and believe in democracy and justice and human rights. And Putin is the bad guy and is a dangerous mass murderer. Here's how the script can go. The good guys do nothing because they're cowards, or they stop the bad guy. Choose. That's where Steve is. That's the kind of stuff he's saying. Someone else tweeted at him and said, nuclear war is a good thing to be afraid of, Steve-O. And he wrote back, until when? Want to give him Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania? How about Poland? Because they're next. Everybody's acting like if there's a World War III, Russia would win it. It's suicide. And his generals and oligarchs know it. He will never be allowed to push that button. That's, and you'll hear in the interview, because we do go there. That's how we start, is talking about this, because that was what was on my mind when I got him on the line and we started talking. And don't worry, then it lightens up. And the reason I'm doing this bonus hour earlier, before the show, is because when we wrapped up the interview at the end of the hour, I felt good. You know, I wasn't feeling on the verge of tears, because we spoke about that at the beginning, and then we talked about other things. So at least momentarily, my mind was relieved. My attention was focused, was taken away from this. And, you know, I always tell you this. You who listen or watch this show are paying attention to the news. The majority of people in the world don't. Because you are focused, you're hyper-focused on what's going on, you're more involved. And when you see images like what we're seeing on our televisions, it hurts. You need to find other things to at least take your attention away from it momentarily. So tomorrow, just so you know, there's a exhibit going on at Florida International University at the museum. Do I have it? Okay, I do have it open. It's at the Frost, the Patricia and Philip Frost Art Museum in Miami. It's part of FIU, and the exhibit is called Retrospectrum, Bob Dylan. You know that I paint. Did you know that Bob Dylan does? I didn't know. But let me read to you about, it's a spanning six decades. Retrospectrum features over 180 paintings, drawings, ironwork, and ephemera, showcasing the development and range of Dylan's visual practice in tandem with that of his musical and literary canon. Let's see. So it's this massive Bob Dylan art exhibit. We're going tomorrow because I have to. Because I need, because otherwise I'd sit here watching the news and that, you know, is scary. Let me tell you one other thing you can do. And I've been telling you about this channel. It's a YouTube channel. It is the news out of Ukraine. It's partial. It says UATV is funded in whole or part by the Ukrainian government. Okay, so you know, it is government. So there's a bit of, I don't want to call it propaganda because I equate lying with propaganda, but it is government content. And I showed you a couple of videos the other day of prisoners, Russian soldiers who were captured by the Ukrainians, who were, one of them called his mother. They were saying that they were being treated well, that they were lied to by the Russians who told them they were going on a peacekeeping mission. And instead, they were the aggressors going into Ukraine and killing people, which is just horrible. Now I want to play for you this video. This was just published. I haven't even seen it yet. It was published, what does it say? It said 4 hours ago. Now I don't see that. But yeah, it was just a few hours ago. And who is this? Is it telling us who this is? The mayor, this is the mayor of Kyiv. The mayor of the Ukrainian capital says that the night in the capital was relatively calm. Well, I'm going to let him tell you. So here, I like I said, it was just published. I haven't seen it yet, but it looks like something that we want to hear. So,
друзі, дорогі кияни, ніч у столиці минула відносно спокійно.
Okay, I'll read you the subtitles when they come up.
Was relatively quiet. Air defense systems were set off several times. Now the city lives in a state of war. Cars drive, grocery stores, and most public pharmacies work. I appeal to the owners of private pharmacies. Please open them where you can. This is very important because people stand in the line for hours to get medicine from public pharmacies. Let me remind you that the Northern and Darnitsky bridges have been opened for communication between the left and right banks in the capital. But if there is no extreme need, retrain from moving around the city. For your own safety, do not ignore the alarm. Go down in the shelter immediately. The city continues to prepare for defense. There are more and more checkpoints, restrictive blocks, check hedgehogs on the street. The hospital in the city are provided with everything necessary. They work. Doctors are in combat duty. Maternity hospitals are also working. And during the last 8 days, 390 babies were born
wow.
in Kyiv. 199 boys and 191 girls.
Wow.
A lemur was born in Kyiv Zoo, just like that. He was called Bayraktar.
Life goes on. Wow.
Also, let me remind you that humanitarian headquarters of the capital is functioning. All contacts you can get on the Kyiv State Administration website. For those who want to help people in need, help, but please be focused. We help people who are close to us as much as we can. We hold Kyiv. In total, we will endure. Glory to Ukraine.
Тримаємо Київ. Разом ми вистоїмо. Слава Україні!
So that is the mayor of Kyiv. Almost 400 babies have been born in basements since the bombing began. It's just astounding. There really are no words. All right. How long is this one? Let me see. Okay. So you know what? We're like a minute away. So here's what's happening. We did this bonus hour, but we're going to be joining the Progressive Voices channel, the Progressive Voices Network, in like 10 seconds. So I'm going to start, you know, the show over with the intro as usual, as we welcome Progressive Voices to the program, and then we'll keep going. This will all be on the podcast, and I'm trying to sync it up so we hit at the right time. So let's start anew. Here we go.